Hello and welcome to everybody listening. This is Balancing the Act, a podcast that focuses on how you manage your job and make sure you travel. In this podcast, you will hear stories from people who were willing to take a leap of faith and believe in their ideas. Each podcast will leave you educated and leave you with a unique life lesson.
Hello and welcome to Balancing the Act. Today I am with Matthew Fraser, who's from America. He's been a world explorer. And when I say world explorer, he's visited 60 countries and about 7 continents. I think a lot of his life is something that you aspire to do. Hi, Matthew.
Hello.
Welcome to Balancing the Act. And I'm very happy to have you here. I'd like to ask you about your travel during a pandemic. I saw a couple of pictures of yours put up on Instagram, and you've been roaming the world even though the pandemic is on. So how is the situation like? And how was your experience while traveling at a pandemic?
This was more recently. It was, a month ago? So I've had 6 or 7 months to kind of gauge, you know, risk to reward. And I've had time to, you know, see what countries are handling it better. And so I don't want to say I'm a complete risk taker where I jumped completely in, you know, in April or something. But with that said, there was definitely some things I had to keep in mind. The insurance was a lot more of a forethought than it was for me ever before. And of course, the mask wearing and the social distancing and things of that nature, obviously were things I had to think about. As far as the actual act of doing it, it was probably the easiest and the smoothest ever of transit of traveling I've ever done, because of the less people and so on and so forth.
Who is your favorite person to travel with? Everybody, you know, loves going to places with people. What is your thought on traveling with people?
That's a good question, because it falls into, I think the word traveling is too generic of a word, because yes, you can travel. You can take a week-long, you know, trip to the Bahamas or somewhere, you know, tropical and luxurious with your friends. That is completely different than going to Bolivia or even Mumbai or somewhere that is completely, completely different than your culture that you're used to by yourself for a month. So I can't really compare the two. So for why I like to travel, me, by myself. Because that's the whole aspect of the traveling that I enjoy, the growth and the challenging myself and not having another opinion to pull me one direction. I'm proud of every decision I've ever made. It's been made primarily by me. And I didn't have a girlfriend to, you know, oh, maybe I don't want to hurt her and blah, blah, blah. I've done everything by my decision, good and bad. I accept my faults, the decisions I made that were bad and good, because I've done most of them by myself. That doesn't mean I don't like traveling with people. But there's two different types of traveling. So me, but if I had to travel with someone, it's with, I have a couple of friends that I have my checklist. Okay, I want to go here. Let me call this person. There's a couple of those, and it's because we've traveled together. So we know how each other travels.
So how has traveling 60 countries and 7 continents made you learn about the different places or learn more about who are my real people and who are people who are just there during my good days?
Yeah, I can split up even too. I can, like, the friend of the people, not even say that because we're still friends, the people that I valued probably overly than I should have back at home, and the people that, you know, some of them I met 7 years ago or 10 years ago and they're still my friends. So I guess I have, like, I jokingly, like, my social media, I don't have, like, I'm not one of these influencers that just has all these followers. I, for the most part, know all my followers, and they know me, at least know of them, or that I'm a friend of a friend. And it's funny because you can, like, you scroll, there's two drastic types of people, my American friends and my travel friends. They're just so, it's such a, but anyways, back to people that I've met. To me, it's not just the cities. This is why I preach hostels so much if you're traveling alone, even if you're traveling just one other person, because you don't want to be just attached to that one person. But going to hostels, even if you don't like rooms, get a private room, because the people you meet there is half of the, or more than half of the whole experience. Because yeah, you want to meet the locals, you get to know the locals, but if you're traveling alone, it's the people that you meet that you learn from. I went here, I went there. And there's that little, especially if you're just starting off, there's that comfort of at least knowing this person traveling too. So maybe like not to be as nervous as if I was just completely by myself. So I'm never always by myself. And the people I've met at hostels, a lot of them, we go to the next city together and we stay friends forever. They introduce me to a local that they know. So it's all like spider webs out from the whole travel experience.
Any specific travel hostel that you would recommend to anybody?
My favorite, again, this is just my own subjective experience, and this was like 6 or 7 years ago, but I've stayed there twice, because it's, and I've looked at the website still, so I don't think they've changed it that much. It's called the BIG, it's B.I, it stands for something, I can't remember what it stands for, in Cape Town, South Africa. It's the most homey, totally the most homey feeling I've ever, because it's an actual house, but it's very, very, very modern. And it's just, the people that attract, just the way it's set up, the people that own it are young. That, to me, was the best home feeling I've ever had in a hostel. So that's my favorite hostel for that reason. But there's, like, the hostels in New Zealand are going to be different than your hostels in Bolivia or even Tanzania. Like, in New Zealand...
Can you tell me your most grateful moment in life when you were in Las Vegas?
I'm grateful for a lot of the opportunities that I had, because I was in the military and I got in a car accident when I was in the military and I got discharged. I was in a coma. That's a whole other story. But I got medically discharged. So because of that, I get some medical benefits that I otherwise would have. Like in America, I don't know if you know, like it's one of the hottest political topics of the many that we have right now is our medical insurance. And it costs a lot of, even a single person is going to cost, a few hundred dollars a month. I don't have to worry about things like that because my medical is covered by the military because they discharge. So I get small, like when I bought my house, I didn't have to put down a lot of money. So I'm grateful for those type of benefits. Just something that happened to me and I got compensated for it. I'm grateful for the people in my life, whether I didn't even realize it at the time, that instilled me to want to like see the world or better myself rather than make stupid purchases and desire to get married and have a kids. And I never had anyone pressure me. So I'm grateful for the people, my parents and my sister, people in my life that helped me out.
Having enough money to travel the world and how you generate that money, more important. This is like a question that every Indian listening to this podcast would want to know. How do you travel the world and keep continuing to have the aspiration to travel?
I can't explain the now without giving you a little bit of a backstory. When I was a kid, Indiana Jones was like my first hero. Like I remember having a whip and a hat. The very first one was set in Egypt. So Egypt, since I was a kid, was always on my mind. As I went through puberty and girls and that stuff, that kind of was set to the back burner. But I always wanted to be an archaeologist. I wanted to see Egypt more than the world, but I wanted to see the world. After I graduated high school, I didn't know what, I thought I was going to be a baseball player, but that didn't happen, of course. So I decided to join the Navy. Only so I can see the world. I wasn't brought up in a military family, but I wanted to see the world and I wanted to get out of the town that I was in. So I joined the Navy. I got in a car accident when I was in the Navy, which enabled me to go see the world. After rehab, which lasted 2 years, I got discharged from the military, got sent back to the civilian world. That's when I moved to Las Vegas to live with my mom, and I fell in love with Las Vegas. I got a job pretty quickly in the nightlife industry. So then I bought my first house at that time. And this was in 2004. So it was in 2003 I bought the house. So it was right before the big real estate boom. So I made a lot of money off that house. I got lucky. It wasn't my intention to, but I did. And I bought a couple more houses. So I just followed what people told me I needed to do. We gotta take the money and buy two more houses. And now you can go and get this job. And it was all about the job and setting myself up for the future. So everything was. So I lost all the houses, all my money, not all the money, but the two houses that I bought during the crash. I was back to square one again. I moved back to Las Vegas to get back in the nightlife industry. I wasn't happy. I was dating a girl at the time that wanted me to marry her, and I didn't want to get married. And I was like, everything was closing in on me. And then my father had passed away, like at that time, unexpectedly. And so that gave me a little bit of a small cushion. It wasn't anything big, but enough for me to let's try this world traveling thing. I couldn't do it before. I got kicked out, and I got discharged from the Navy from my car accident. And then let me try this again now that I have a little cushion. And so I booked a one-way ticket to New Zealand I don't have enough money to do this forever. So my intention was to come back and just get it out of my system, basically, and then get back to work when I got home. Well, a lot happened during those 6 months, as you can imagine, to me, to back home, my girlfriend, everything. So I go back after 6 months, me and my girlfriend break up, and I'm like, I'm less happy. I was happy when I was traveling, and I'm less happy in America than I was when I left. So why don't I just travel again? So exactly what I did. And not having a plan, not knowing what I was doing, that allowed for things just to come in. I ended up on the Gili Islands. So I started making money because I was an instructor. So all the money that I was making being an instructor paid for my, it wasn't a lot, but enough to pay for my lodging, my food. So all the other money that I had, which I didn't need to spend much because it's pretty cheap living on the island, it was that sustaining that part. Then I flew back home after 2 years, and I thought I wanted to settle down a little bit, so I got a dog. So in order for me to get a dog, I had to get a house with the yard. So I got the house with the yard just for my dog, and then next thing I knew, I make a lot of money on that house, and it's a great location. One of my friends needed it for a couple months, and I made a deal. I said, hey, you pay for my travels and watch my dog, you can stay there. That was my first Airbnb experience. I'm like, wait a minute, I can do this. They like staying there. It went well. You know what? Let me try this. So I put on Airbnb, and it's been almost 3 years, and I've been traveling off of that. Airbnb money.
So Airbnb has changed your life.
Exactly. Everything was incremental, though. And if I go like 4 months without, 3 or 4 months without traveling, I have enough money on my credit card points to pay for my ticket. So my flights are usually paid, if not all, at least half of them, through credit card points. So I use those a lot to my advantage.
Super. So in this whole transition of things, of you coming from a place, buying your place, and now traveling the world, what are the most interesting things that you've done?
The two wow places for me that you're not going to, there's nowhere on this planet that you're going to experience this, in my opinion, is Antarctica and Sơn Đông Cave in Vietnam. Those two are the most alien, most unless you actually, go to Mars, you're probably not going to see more alienistic terrain than Sơn Đông Cave in Vietnam or Antarctica.
So can you tell me a little about this? Now that you've told me a little about this, I'm very interested and intrigued to know what really happened there in Sơn Đông Cave, Vietnam.
Are you familiar with Sơn Đông Cave?
Yes, a little.
It's the largest cave in the world. I think somebody excited about this cave. And it's so big that it has two of its own jungles growing inside it, because the dolite is, it's on top of a cave.
It's cave.
It'll come, yeah. There's two sections of that in this cave. So it's a 3 day hike, and you stay in the cave for two of those nights. And you are, going through rock, beautiful, like beautiful rocks, like rocks, and then, you know, so much in sand 1 minute, and then an hour later you walk and you're in a freaking jungle. So it's like, and this is all inside of a naturally made cave. Like, there's been less people, or at this point probably not anymore, but when I did it, there was about the same amount of people that had been to space had been inside this cave. Because it was only open to the public in 2014, and it wasn't like, even though it had very limited spaces then. So 2017 was like the first year that, you know, you didn't have like a year long waiting list. So not a lot of people have been in there. But it's just like something. But
how did you come to know of this, and you know, how much does it cost? Is it very heavy on your pocket? Do you have to be ready to be there? Like, you know, how physically fit do you have to be?
I found out about it again just through my travels. Like, I did Watmo Caves in New Zealand, the glow room caves there, and I like, that was my first like real cave. It wasn't really caving, it was for me though, it was. I just loved that whole, you know, caving experience, or something that nature made, no human did anything to, and you're actually in the water. So all that caving was on my radar. So I'll, you know, Google things to do around the world, and when I got closer to Asia, things to do, and I found out about this cave. And I realized, did more research, and it was just opened up, and not a lot of people have been there. That's why I haven't heard a lot about it, because it was relatively new. So this is like this was in 2014. And then like I said, it was a long waiting list. So it's like a year waiting list. And I said, okay, put me on the waiting list. Like 9 months later, they called me and said, we have an opening. Do you want, you know, you're on the list if you want to go. It's $3,000 though. So at that time, it's going to take another $1,000 just for me to get out there and back for the ticket. So like, I passed on it, and I always regretted it. And then there was a friend of mine who's my favorite guy to travel with, to answer your question. He has his own YouTube channel, Jayo, by the way. I'm in a lot of them. I don't know if you've come across it or if you've seen
it. I will definitely check it out.
In my Instagram, if you see that Jayo hat I have on, it's his. Anyways, he's riding around in a recumbent tricycle. He was going through Vietnam on it, and he remembered I'd brought it up to him. I was just walking up doing the level 5 rafting in the Zambezi River. I had just finished, and I'm walking up the hill, and I was so exhausted. I was completely dead. I was drained. And I get this text message from Matt. He said, hey, you still down at the Sun Dung Cave? I'll be in Vietnam this day, which is like 3 weeks away. I'm like, oh man, I don't know. I'm exhausted. Luckily, I said, you know, screw it, let's do it. So 3 weeks later, I was doing it. Because I know if I didn't do it with someone, I probably wasn't going to do it at all. So him and I did it together. And it's all on video. It's well done. Go to jayo.com, Sun Dung Cave. He does a great job of it. And you'll see what I'm talking. You don't have to just take my word for it. You can actually see
and witness it. Correct.
Yeah, it's like it's such an alien atmosphere. And you combine that with the actual physical adventure of it. So to lead into your second part of your question, you don't have to be in shape in the sense where like you have to run a lot. It's not cardiovascular. It's more of you need to be limber, because there's no rails put in. Remember, this wasn't made for, you know, nature made this. So there's a lot of climbing, a lot of, you know, things you have to, you know, squeeze through, and a lot of rope climbing. So you have to be agile, not necessarily, you know, you can smoke a lot of cigarettes and still do it. But if you can at least like bend at the waist and come close to touching your toes, yeah, you might want to do some limbering up before you do it.
Anything that makes travel fun for you? Is it anything with food? Are you big on food? Are you big on the culture? Are you big on the people? What is it that makes this fun for you?
The number one thing, like without question, is the unknown. It's the kid in me. I mean, Peter Pan is one of my, I have a tattoo of Peter Pan. He's like one of my, I don't want to say inspiration, but he's a part of me. So it's that sense of, not to sound corny and take a corner turn, the wanderlust, just wandering and not knowing what's going to happen. That's why I don't like planning. That's why I don't like itineraries. That's why I don't like, that's why I don't like round trip tickets. I wish airports would let me, because a lot of countries want you to have an exiting ticket. I just want one way tickets everywhere I go. That's what excites me. It's the unknowns. It's the
What are your plans to come to India to travel? And anything that fascinates you about India? Because a lot of people who are listening to this podcast, that in fact, 80% of the people who listen to the podcast are Indians.
I am...
Quick, fun fact.
And this is... It's, the thing about India, it's like my... It's the... I don't want to say forbidden fruit, but in a sense it is, because India is obviously one of the most, you know, obviously the most populated country, and it's almost like a, if nothing else, India is bragging rights for traveler. Like if you've never been to India, have you even really traveled, type of thing. So there's that aspect of it that makes you really want to go. But also my favorite of all the Indiana Jones movies was the Temple of Doom. I mean, that was all that took place in India. And so, like, I've already done Egypt, and then I've got to do India now. And to me, like, it's the genuine difference that I'm in. Because I've heard tons of stories about, you know, I've heard more stories about it. Because I don't like doing more than the minimal amount of research on the internet, because I don't want to have a big idea in my head so I'd be disappointed. But I do listen to my friends who's been there, and even if the people that didn't like it, and even the people that did like it, the people that didn't like it liked it for the same, didn't like it for the same reason the people did like it. The authenticity of it, the griminess, the realness, the chaos, that aspect of it. That's what I'm kind of, I don't say nervous, but it's a good nervous.
Well, Matthew, it was great speaking to you. It was a great conversation about how you can travel the world, how you can be the child that you really want to be and not just be restricted to what your job entitles you to, and be so much more. And thank you for, you know, taking the time out, being on Balancing the Act, and you've truly balanced the act, and I have a lot of learnings out of this one. So thank you.
Awesome.
This podcast is brought to you by Backpacker Me, Instagram handle @BackpackerMe. Follow, share.